Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The Bit Boys podcast, this is Alan from That Age 12. That's my podcast. I just wanted to call in to congratulate you on your 2 years anniversary. I myself, on my own podcast, has reached 100 episodes, which is pretty cool. And it's really cool that you guys as well has the same anniversary as I do. And you may remember me from our crossover we did last year on The Odyssey, which I really recommend checking out. And I heard a rumor that we might do another crossover very soon. Who knows what it's going to be about. Anyway, congratulations on a 2 years anniversary. And I'll see you soon again. Please like, share, and subscribe to my own podcast, World.H2L, if you like history. And enjoy the rest of the podcast.
Well, I don't know what we have next, but I've read one last book that I've read, which I will get to in a little moment. But I would just like to mention, because I don't know, you know, we've been doing this for, I don't know what the time on this is, maybe over an hour. We haven't mentioned PJ. It's our anniversary. Woo! So, you know, that's worth mentioning. Here we go. 2 years of books, boys.
2 years of finding out the mysteries.
And, you know, we're going to celebrate by, guys, we keep telling you to go to Patreon, hear all our plays. We're going to start releasing episodes of Playboys for free on the Books Boys feed.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to start at the beginning. So you're going to get the older ones for free, and it, you know, a period of a few months. And we'll continue making new ones as well. So there's still going to be, you know, reason to go to Patreon. But
a lot of episodes.
We want more people to hear some of the great content that you and Alex and Mireia did. So it's all going to be on there.
Yeah, and Robert too. So, I mean, they're playing.
Going to release some Dark Past Dreamers with Robert as well. Yeah.
It's great. Yeah. Fantastic. So find out what it's all about.
That's it. Get it. Now, get it, buy it, books. That's what they say. How can I say that in Spanish? Cógelo, cómpralo, libros? Something like that?
Sí, ¿por qué no? Cógelo, cómpralo, libros.
Welcome to Chicos de los Libros. Episode 25.
25.
So the last book I read,
El Método Ana Karenina.
The last book I read, PJ, is called Made for More. And I just realized my camera's gone off, so you can't see it. There we go. Made for More.
Oh,
by Lindsay Seeley. So Lindsay Seeley. And she works in education. She teaches. She's an educator. But she wants to also find ways to help people, mostly girls. She does, you know, she does have some stuff that they do with boys as well. But a lot of her content is aimed for helping younger girls and then also teenage girls. Just with like confidence and things like that. You know, it's called Made for More. So it's trying to create a bolder, brighter you. It's saying, you know, you are made for more. Different things, you know, for example, confidence is one of the main things. Happiness, confidence, authenticity, mindfulness, making progress, making connections. And it's always about more versus less. So it's more happiness, less waiting, more authenticity, less conformity, more power, less fear, you know. And it's to kind of, you read it and, you know, it's designed for girls, but like, you know, I read it and there's times when I thought I'm taking something away from this myself. And I think that anyone could benefit from it by all means. And she's written a lot of other books as well. So I would definitely say to check those out. So I would just recommend checking out, as I say, Made for More. And she's written a whole bunch, you know, girls can do hard things, A to Z of self-care, how to help her, growing teenage girls, a whole load of stuff. And I find it good. There's these little tricks, these little self-interviews that you do as you go through it to help you, guide you along. And we talk about, you know, what confidence is not, and then what confidence is, to kind of put you on the right path towards things. And the same with the other things, you know, authenticity and everything else. And setting yourself like little time trackers and how to prioritize things and how to be mindful. So if you feel that this would be helpful to you, I'd really, really recommend it, because I really enjoyed it.
Hey guys, Jonathan Edward Durham here. Just wanted to give you a quick congratulations on 2 years of fantastic podcasts, and to say thank you for everything you all do, not only for contemporary, but classic literature as well. It's very much appreciated. So here's to 2 more years and many more, and I will see you guys in the next chapter. Bye-bye.
Okay, cool. Thanks. You know, we've had some good books sent to us. I really like the sound of that book we reviewed last month. That you read, I haven't read it yet though, Unfettered Journey. I really like that kind of Huxley Orwellian themes that was mentioned.
Oh yes,
it's a pity we never.
It had some Huxley in themes. It did indeed.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just curious what the author has to say about all that, because I always liked a bit of a discussion on dystopia.
Yeah. Hold on, nice PJ.
What?
Just double check and see. Someone's calling. 2 seconds. Let's see who we've got.
Okay.
Hello, you're through to Books Boys. You got Dean and PJ. Who's calling?
Well, this is Gary F. Benger, and I'm delighted to join you today.
Ah, Gary, amazing. Oh my God. That's a great surprise, because we just read your book, Unfettered Journey, on the last episode.
Yes. How wonderful. I'm glad to come back after you've reviewed it, but that's great. Let's talk about it.
And we were worried that we had may or may not have butchered the pronunciation of your last name. So do you want to say it again for me?
The last name is Benger, and actually it's French Huguenot. Goes way back to the 16th century,
right
before the family had to get out of Dodge, if you will.
We were debating whether to go full French kind of Benger or like a kind of Bengier Americanized kind of. We weren't sure where on the scale to go. You know,
it was bastardized as it went through a few countries. Yeah.
Well, so this book's a year or two out now, 2020. That's right, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it's it came out in the end of 2020 in the middle of COVID. And very pleased to say in the interim, it's won 11 book awards. And it is now out in 8 languages. And it's in English and also British English. So there's a British English edition for those of the listeners.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow. So I don't have to complain when I see Z's instead of S's and things like that.
Exactly right.
Yeah. I knew someone. This is a random aside. PJ, I knew a Spanish person once who always wrote in American English and not British. And she said, because if I write in British English, the Americans will think I've just done it wrong. But if I write in American English, the British people will just sigh and be like, oh, okay, you know.
All right, okay. What languages have they been released in
so far? Let's see. French, Italian, German, Japanese, Brazilian, Portuguese, and Russian. Let's say,
PJ, can you speak all of those languages?
Wow. Well, except Brazilian Portuguese, I think I can. Yeah.
Oh, and Spanish, of course.
That's
for you.
Yeah.
PJ,
oh, it's fine as well.
So, PJ, we're gonna get you 8 copies in 8 different languages.
Okay. Yeah, I'd love to read them. Yeah, give them all to me. I'll learn the Brazilian Portuguese, and as it goes.
You could tell me if the translations are any good.
Yeah. What I always love about when they're translated is that the book cover is usually quite different, and I do actually love that just some other artist from Brazil made like the interpretation of your story. And I do collect translations as well.
But anyway, back to you. I must disappoint you. The covers are almost the same. So yes.
Oh well. But at least they're out there.
Yeah, well, it was interesting to see my name in Cyrillic, though, and in Japanese.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good cover, though. I really like it. I mean, the cover got me curious before we even started. You know, it's these people kind of hanging off this water wheel kind of thing. And I thought, right, what's going on here? And it's an attractive cover. So I think it was a good choice. Let me ask you this, because you got the book released during COVID. How long did it take to write?
It took on the order of 3 years to actually write it, but I've been thinking about these ideas for, you know, 30 years, actually, starting a long time ago, thinking about some philosophical topics such as, you know, do we have free will? And I just know that both of you were philosophy undergraduates.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that's how long I've been thinking about this. You probably have too, right? So
yeah.
Those are fundamental questions. You can't get them out of your head.
Did the COVID lockdown and everything, did that give you like the chance to kind of get it finished a bit quicker than you would have otherwise? Like, did that give you the free time to kind of say, right, I'm just going to finally get this finished? Or was that like the expected release anyway?
Well, it actually gave me the time to just spend even more rounds in editing. So I was working basically 80-hour weeks for a year during COVID. And, I had the fortune to work with some wonderful editors, and I had a half dozen editors, and I just kept on getting more because, writing is considered to be a sort of a singular kind of exercise. But, good books are out of one unified mind. It's not a camel made by committee, right? Mm. Which is a horse. Horse made by committee is a camel. You've heard an old joke. And a book can be the same way. But if you have good editors and the editors are willing to have a nice aggressive conversation with you, the author, but if the author still has carte blanche to decide what comes out, I think you can have a wonderful result. So it kept on getting better all the time. Yeah.
Good.
Good.
So, I mean, the first thing is, look, this talks about a lot of philosophy, as we mentioned, and it's really interesting. I want to recommend it to another friend of mine who is a physicist. He's actually a former physics teacher, because there's some science in this as well. There's some physics in this, and I think it blends beautifully, like a bunch of different ways of dealing with things. There's the physics and the mathematical approach. There's the philosophy approach, and I suppose the idea of our main character, Joe, is to kind of bring everything together and then explore concepts such as free will and artificial intelligence and that kind of thing. And we look at some great philosophers. So PJ, we mentioned Socrates and things like that, and akrasia, free will and that kind of stuff. Akrasia is the weakness of will, and all that kind of stuff. So it's an amazing read. And I'm making little notes as I'm reading, and I'm thinking, okay, I think we're building up to Hume's necessary connections here. You know, make a note about this. Like, there's another kind of philosophical thing that we covered ticked off. What was the... I mean, you said you thought about this for a long time. Was that always the plan? Like, it's got to be a novel kind of based around philosophy. Like, was that the most important aspect for you?
And this novel then has many... layers.
It certainly does. Yeah,
it's like an onion. Someone famous said that. I don't know who said that. It was Shrek.
That's right. Yeah.
so the book oh, yeah. The book takes place 140 years in the future, in the year 2161, and I did that because hopefully that makes it less dated. And it's also because I spent my career in tech, working in Silicon Valley for the last almost 30 years. And I have some sort of great experience in a lot of the tech, major technologies. I'm very fortunate to have worked in bioscience for half a dozen years, in chip design for 4 years, in computer peripherals, in streaming media over the internet, this technology that we're using right now, and then the internet with eBay. So I had a lot of experience of thinking about how these technologies evolve. So part of the basis behind the book is, well, what is highly likely to be the most important things for our future. So that's sort of a different take on science fiction. You know, there's a lot of science fiction that no longer aspires to be realistic. And so that's the frame. You know, what is highly likely for the future, and what problems will we really have are the most important one? Which ones should we focus on to worry about? Because there's a lot of stuff we don't have to.
Just to not to interrupt you too much, but that is one of the things that I find most endearing, is that it is realistic. You know, and as I'm reading it, I'm thinking, yeah, give us 100, 150 years. Like, yeah, I could see that as one of the possibilities for how the world goes. You know, I don't like, I'm not into like a lot of fantasy, a lot of things that I just find unbelievable. You know,
yes.
I do like something where I think, this is going to set in the real world, and it might not be today's real world, but it has to be realistic for me to really get on board with it. I did find that it was, you know.
Well, thank you.
More like,
yeah, go ahead. Let's talk about that for a while, because I think this is an interesting topic first to, you know, set the stage and talk about the future.
And I think it's more like speculative fiction, where you have an idea in your head, you want to explore, and you're exploring it through a story rather than making the story the main focus, as in with escapism or in science fiction, for example, in the escapist science fiction. So I think it's an interesting concept. Yeah, I did recommend the book last month that was called $1 trillion by Eschbach. And it's really a German, not sci-fi book, I would say, but again, speculative fiction, which is just the theme, what would happen if someone had an incredible amount of money? What if one person had the amount of money a first world country might have? So I like the idea that you're incorporating your ideas and making a story, and then people can see through the story how these ideas evolve.
Mm. I was reading this and thinking, look, I can be a bit of a pessimist, and I kind of feel like we're heading for a technological dystopia and a capitalist dystopia. So I'm reading this book and I'm thinking, oh no, this is the dystopia that I've been waiting patiently for. You know, this is what I'm looking for. I mean, there's good, there's pros and cons of the book, you know, of the world. You do a good job with world building. But I mean, the very first thing we see in the book is Joe turning off the pip of the personal assistant kind of thing.
His personal digital assistant, which is sort of a program like a Siri, you know, 5.0 in his, which happens to be, you know, you no longer carry your phone along with you, but in fact, it's a chip embedded below your left ear, right? And you know, it's connected to, you know, a corneal implant that is like a little screen, and, you know, you're attached to the cloud, and which is the net in this case, and, you know, you can just sort of talk to it and say something, and it will answer, right? And we can easily imagine that will happen. Right?
I think that's highly realistic and terrifies me. So I'm reading this and I'm thinking, yes, I'm immediately on board with this guy, page one, because he's turning it off, you know. So I'm like, okay, he has captured my sympathies, you know, immediately. He wants out of the technology. And then, of course, when he meets Evie, you know, she's kind of the other side of the tracks almost. She's from a community that is less into the technology. You know, he can't believe he sees bicycles when he goes there, you know, because he's not in, like, he's almost not living in the real world, you know.
That's an allusion to Burning Man. I actually went to Burning Man a few years ago to do research.
Yes, just for research purposes. And, you know, so we see that her community is more of a community, and it is more like everybody knows her and they're chatting to her and they're giving her gifts, like, not for benefit to themselves, and it's nice and it's real, and he's shocked because the world he comes from isn't really like that. Like, yeah, he has his friend as a riff, isn't it? So they still like do favors for each other and things like that, but I feel that his world is a lot more artificial, you know.
Yes.
And that makes me feel like this is where we're going, and I'm scared.
Well, and it's an interesting question. There's a lot of folks who write dystopian, you know, futurism, right? And there's a question whether it will be utopian or dystopian. So here's an economic basis to it. And again, this is hard science reality, I think. So it goes something like this. Here's an important thesis. In this next century, the two most important technologies that facing humankind affecting our lives will be bioscience and AI and robotics. Mm-hmm. And I argue that, and I was in bioscience for half a dozen years, and I will argue that that will have a phenomenal change on our lives because of CRISPR-Cas9, the latest technologies, which are phenomenally exponential in terms of what it can do to develop drugs and change our health. You know, we're not going to be living forever. I'm sorry, some of the futurists, that's not going to happen. 120 years, we're not going to gain immortality, but we will live a lot longer and we'll be healthier, but we won't notice. In other words, if you live 20 years longer and that's normal and you don't get cancer and, you know, all that sort of thing, well, that's just the way life is. So I actually think that we will, you know, that's just the way life will be. Huge difference, but we won't notice so much if you're living then. But we will notice AI and robotics, because the economics will drive it. So, you know, right now we've got an Ukraine war going on. We're watching the drones and there's military reasons why that will get developed. They'll have robots walking around the battlefield so that people won't get killed, right? They'll spend the money. And then the economics will work because there'll be more and more automation. And, you know, have you seen those Boston Dynamics dancing robots? And that sort of
thing? Yeah.
Okay. So my thesis is actually conservative. That's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to be in 10 years and 20 years because it's going to take a long time to make this work. Sure. You're going to have to, you know, just like the automobile, you had to build the roads and you had to put the legal infrastructure in to deal with what happens when people die and stuff. Getting robots to be ubiquitous will take a long time, but it's a simple engineering problem. And in the sense it's from A to Z, there's nothing unknown in the steps. It's just a matter of making it work better and solving problems, right? So I think in the next 100 years, they're going to be really annoying because they're going to do unexpected things. But they're going to build them, and eventually they're going to be about our size because they'll fit into all the infrastructure that is in, you know, trillions of dollars of infrastructure that fit people. And pretty soon you'll have, you know, robots that'll be the servers in the restaurants and all that. And then they will be mining the ores and smelting the metal and building the factories that build the robots.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, two things. One is, human productivity will not be based on us, but it'll be based on the machines making machines. And that means that there'll be a bunch of robots. And so the amount of stuff in the world that can be made by them is going to be really a lot. There'll be a lot of stuff. But the second thing is there will be no jobs.
That's what I was about to say. I think the book deals with that well, but I suppose there's been societies in the past. We look at the likes of ancient Sparta that had an entire town, Messenia, enslaved to do all their labor for them and then just give them the profits, essentially. We would need to use robots like that. My question is, how do we get there? Because what's going to happen is one by one, companies will take in robots and fire people. And that person now doesn't have a job, you know. And I'm thinking, like, how do we kind of bridge this gap between now there's enough robots doing all the work that people don't have to work? We've hit the supposed utopia, I guess, you know. And in the meantime, because I see this, right? You put an automated checkout in the store, Mr. Store Owner saves some money. It's not, you know, he doesn't say to the guy, good news, a robot can do your job. You go home and I'll still pay you.
That's right. So, Dean, you've hit exactly the problem that I focus on. I think that is, you're exactly right. Crossing the chasm from where we are now to what that world will look like when there are no jobs. And the fact there'll be a lot of stuff. So how do we, starting in the West, do that in a way that doesn't destroy society, right? It's because essentially the fact that some few will own those robot factories is it's an asymmetric point, right? It's not stable. Sure. So you know, who owns the robot factories, right?
So this is where the socialism comes in, I guess, right? This is where we nationalize everything.
And in fact, in the book, what it assumes is, yes, there came a point when they agreed to, nationalize the ownership of the robot factories, but in the states, because we had sort of a culture that was more based on property rights than certain egalitarian places in, you know, Western Europe, that the quid pro quo in the states was to put in place these laws, the Levels Acts, which called for levels from one at the top to 99 at the bottom. And supposedly they're meritocratic. They're based upon how, you know, your own merit. There is some hint that maybe there's some legacy built into it and maybe they're not quite so fair. So that's the social issue that I, and that's the conceit that I use to drive some of the drama in the story is that. Now, let's all hope that that doesn't happen, right? But
yeah, I mean, PJ, yeah, just to fill you in a bit, the way the levels works, as I understand it, the way I read this, right, maybe this isn't necessarily the intention, it felt to me like we've almost introduced a kind of socialist, kind of almost communist thing where they said, let's nationalize all this production, now the people don't have to work, and this is all great, and you get your basic sustenance provided. But if you want to work, you still can, but it's very limited to like 12 hours a week, But then there is this culture of like, but you could be doing more, you know, and these silly laws that restrict our work. And it's kind of going back to the capitalism again, and the people in the higher levels have more luxuries. So it's like bringing back the capitalism again. And that made me a little bit sad. I'm a big anti-capitalist, but...
This is what Andrew Yang writes about in the War Normal People. I don't know if you read it, Gary, but he talks a lot about automation and just disappearance of jobs in modern America specifically, and that everything's becoming automated, and looks very good, but slowly no jobs and more crisis, more mental crisis. And
And Dean, to the point about the the luxuries. So in the book, I assume that everything's free. You know, you walk in the restaurant, you just order, and then you walk out, wave to the robot. But the top 10% cost you something. And the thesis there is that, you know, humans by our nature are competitive, and it's hard to imagine how there won't be some social competition left. And so that's the thesis. There is still credits that you pay for things, and still some people want to value those to be different than someone else, right? So that's why if you want the best wine, the best Irish whiskey, you have to pay for it.
And I'll stress, because I don't know if I made it clear, I find that that is very realistic. It just makes me sad. Not that like, oh, the, you know, I don't like how the book's dealt with it. More like, yeah, it's dealt with it in the right way. I'm disappointed by humanity, kind of. Sad, you know?
That's right. But and back to the jobs, though, it's an interesting thing. So as an example, one of the jobs is held by a woman named Dina, and she is the manager in charge of a space station orbiting the moon, whose mission is to send probes to exoplanets, right? And she's got 1,000 robots working to build this thing. That's her job. That's a cool job. Can you imagine a world where having a job is a privilege?
It's an unusual mindset for me, because I'm stuck in that, you know, jobs are a kind of slavery mentality. She has this job that she loves that is a privilege, and she wishes they could work more than they're actually allowed to do.
So to recap this conversation about the hard science view that is the setting for the book, my thoughts are first that I think it's important for speculative fiction to actually deal with the real problems that humanity will face. And this one of the automation making jobs go away, at the same time that we'll have a lot more economic output, tons. It can be a utopia. And so how do we manage that? That's a key problem. So that's the setting for the reason why that is in the book.
Yeah. But I mean, just to quickly say, like, I loved it because there is a romance story as well. You got to have that. I love that. I'm a sucker for a romance story. But then I'm like, hold on, it's romance and Socrates. Like, this is just what I needed, you know. And then I'm bringing in the philosophy and I'm having the economic kind of thoughts, the political philosophy, and then all these different layers of things. I'm like, this is amazing. This is exactly what I wanted from a novel, essentially. You've written the perfect novel, you know.
Thank you. Well, and now to the ideas. As I said, my master's thesis was in philosophy of mind, and in speculative fiction, there's a lot of, I think, crazy stuff. You know, are robots going to be sentient and conscious? You know, there was a controversy a few months back where a Google engineer was saying that one of their products is conscious, which everyone attacked as being complete malarkey at this point. So, and I agree with that. Question is whether they will ever be conscious, and you know, there's the hard problem of consciousness. We don't even understand what it is. And so could we even create it in a machine? Will that ever happen? I think that's a very important question.
You've just asked yourself the question that I wanted to ask you next, because that's Joe's whole point, is to find out, can we make this AI really have a human level of consciousness? I mean, do you think that it is possible eventually?
Well, I'll say in the book that Joe thinks that it's not possible. You know, in the year 2161, the conventional wisdom is, they're kind of conscious. And Joe, being an AI scientist, knows that it's all cheap tricks all the way down. So, but can it ever happen? Well, in the book, I leave that a little bit ambiguous at the end. You know, there's the scene where the robot does something and Joe asked, did that robot just tell a joke? You know.
And we get more from the robots near the end, not to give spoilers. I never really talk about the last kind of third of a novel, but we get very action-y. Because it's an action movie near the end with all this kind of cool stuff going on, and the robots are kind of driving some of this. And we start to question more, like, well, could this one be a little bit closer to like that kind of consciousness than maybe we thought was possible? So it is interesting, you know?
Yeah. So to be more precise in answering your question, in my characterization of how physics works in my hypothesis about ontology of and how this all fits together, that would not preclude this. But I'm unsure whether we can ever create that. So we're talking millennia, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Fair answer. Well, look, we're almost out of time. So I'm going to ask you two final questions. The first one is, do you want to real quick plug your website or tell people where they can get the book?
Yes. So they can get the book, as I said, 8 languages, 11 awards. You can get it on Amazon and in bookstores around the world now. My website is Gary F. Benger, B-E-N-G-I-E-R, GaryFBenger.com. And there are also, you know, a dozen websites in different countries. So whether it's DE or
all the different
or co.uk, you can find my website.
Well, now to the last question that we always ask that we have kindly not given you time to prepare for. you know, because I could ask you if, you know, what novel do you want to write? Well, you've done it. But the question we ask is, if there's an existing novel that you wish you'd been the person to write, what would that be?
Oh, wow, a hard question.
Well, we don't give you preparation time.
No, it's terrible. Well, okay, I'll just fall back on an easy answer then. My favorite author is probably William Faulkner, and I've read virtually all of his oeuvre except The Reavers, which I read The Reavers this summer because I think that's a good book as an entree to Faulkner. Faulkner is a fascinating character. Okay. He wrote about the South, and he was born in I think 1897 or something. So his growing up in the South was colored by the racial relations there in the South. He does a magnificent job with those topics. And interestingly about his history is that he was thought as a very simple regional writer. Everyone ignored him in the US and his books almost all went out of print. But in Paris, they got some interest. And then he became famous in the salons of Paris. And then the word came back from Paris to New York. Oh, here's an interesting guy. No, he's not just a local writer. And so Faulkner became famous finally by way of Paris. And so then he won his Nobel Prize and other awards. So.
Wow, brilliant.
Yeah, wonderful writer. It's hard for most people to get into him because he writes these extraordinarily long sentences. By the way, my book does not use long sentences. I'm more of a writer, but I think he does a wonderful job of painting pictures, and so that's one of the skills of writers that I respect.
Awesome. Well, Gary, thank you so much for calling into the show. It's been wonderful having you. Yeah. And I'm going to go recommend this book to basically everyone. So,
well, thank you very much. Thanks and so I hope much, the readers enjoy Unfettered Journey. It's been a wonderful journey for me. Thanks for inviting me to your show.
No problem. Take care. Have a great day.
Take care.
So going to take a 30-second break just to hear from another great podcast on the TNC network. And I should say, of course, thanks to the TNC network for all their help and supporting and hosting the podcast.
Hey, all you guys, gals and non-binary pals.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Maddie. And we're the hosts of WTF is Happening,
Australia's number one pop culture podcast, as voted by our mums.
We're here to be your pop culture catch-up.
You can expect stories from our personal lives that basically guarantee we'll never get a date.
Legendary guest interviews where we find out which cultural moments shaped their lives.
And honestly, just a touch of, like, chaotic, frantic energy.
Now, as soon as you're done with the iconic podcast you're listening to right now,
go and listen and subscribe to us.
Agreed.
Cute.
Well, they said we were iconic, PJ, so...
Well...
That's good. Do I have any more... Yay!
What's going on there?
2 years of... What about this one?
Oh, yeah.
3 years of... Oh, yeah.
Well, shall we wrap up with our recommendations?
Indeed. Well, I'd like to recommend Halloween time. Ooh. Oh, spooky times. I have read a lot of good fantasy and horror novels back in my days. Not as much anymore, but I always like a good story that's not just about scaring you. It's also about our inner fears, about the nightmares that we're kind of dealing with, you know, because they want to be seen. And I've always enjoyed Clive Barker for that. And I was going to recommend Aberrat, which I think is his tour de force.
Okay.
It's basically his children books. But I've mentioned Aberrat, I think, before. And if not, I just mention again that it's a story about a girl who goes to a parallel kind of universe, which is kind of an ocean with 25 islands, 24. Every island lives in one time zone and one lives outside time. But I've mentioned it before, so I'll mention The Great and Secret Show, which is one of his adult horror novels. And it's quite disturbing at some parts and very fascinating. So the concept is very interesting. It's about lovers in California who get... who in a kind of an earthquake gets kind of sucked in to two different entities. So in one side of the one part of the story is these two supernatural forces in constant combat with each other, kind of like good and evil. But then these lovers are kind of sucked into their entities, and it becomes all very confusing, as it sounds indeed confusing. An apocalypse happens. We've got the lovers being kind of metaphors, like melted into these two monsters. And it is really horrific. But the whole novel is great because essentially getting a sense of a massive apocalypse and earthquake, yet the themes of love is completely mixed up with becoming a monster, essentially. There's a really, some what I like about Barker is he comes up with some extremely disturbing concepts. There is one thing called licks in it, which I can't even talk about in the radio show in case someone under 18 is there. But it's probably the most disturbing concept I've ever come across here. Can I use, let's just say it's a monster made of two different bodily fluids. And essentially one of these high entities, he makes monsters out of using two of his body fluids. Every time he uses two body fluids, he creates a monster. You're thinking, why in God should I read this? Well, it's deeply disturbing, but again, it's about apocalypse, it's about nightmare, it's about relationships, ironically enough. And Clive Barker is a very sensitive soul, and he's not just there to thrill. He's there to talk about real nightmares and real concepts. Made a big impact on me. My cousin Sean loved it as well. So big say hello to him.
Okay.
And it's the first book of his art trilogy. So give it a try, guys.
Good. Before I get to mine, I should mention that we did say that it was Halloween. And actually, you're probably listening now after Halloween. But just because it is Halloween... So there we go, a bit of Bobby Pickett for you.
Lord.
And of course, that's kind of a Frankenstein reference. And the book I'm recommending is not Frankenstein, but Dracula. This book is from 2009, and it's my recommendation. It's called Dracula the Undead, and it's the official sequel to Bram Stoker's Dracula, because it was written by his great-grandnephew, Dacre Stoker. And Mark someone called Ian Holt with him as well. Yeah.
All right.
Wonder how much it's like, hey, we've got someone to help me write it. And I'm like, did he write it all? I don't know. Did they just want to have the Stoker name on the book to make it sell? You know, I'm not sure. Look, I read this when it came out. It was fine. It was fun. It was good. Obviously, it doesn't touch on the original. You know, the real recommendation is the original Dracula, but I recommended that last year, I believe. So,
yeah. I know. I was just about to say, like, when you were saying Dracula, say mentioning this sequel, okay.
And that's the last time I will do a recommendation.
Are you sure you don't want to recommend another picture book by some actress the next time? Maybe you want to recommend the calendar you bought from the restaurants.
Yeah. When I was in looking to pamphlets, discover books.
Pamphlets, you know? From hotels. Hotel pamphlets. You can recommend them. Oh, no.
So if you've made it to the end of the show, thank you very much. It has been the Books Boys 2-year anniversary episode. There we go. So hopefully everyone enjoyed.
And I just want to say to our listeners, muchas gracias. Arigato gozaimashita. Tusen tak. Dankivo. Jinkuye barso. Spasibo barso. Yeah. Dankeschön. Thank you so much for listening 2 years. And if I've left out any languages, please do not take it personally. And if you want to also just give us books, give us any books, give us your books, give us other books, just give us books. Don't be shy.
And get on the Patreon. You can do other things as well. You can check out our music on Spotify, and there's links to a lot of stuff on booksboys.com. And of course, thanks and to TNC and Radio Oxon for playing the show.
And if you want to be the coolest kid in class, you will get yourself a nice Books Boys t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Fitted we have here to your costume.
Little Alfred wrapped in his bufanda, so you can be part of these shenanigans. And yes, you can get the Books Boys t-shirt. You know, PJ, quick anecdote. I was on the train yesterday, and a guy walks in with an actual boombox, right, on the train. And I think, is he going to play Books Boys on the boom? Oh, no, he didn't, sadly. but he played, like, Irish country music. And I'm trying to read Unamuno in Spanish, and I'm getting upset about the distraction. He's playing it very loudly, and he has to be told eventually by the staff to turn it down. And on the way out, he pats me on the shoulder. And I'm like, you knew I was annoyed by this. You knew. It's the kind of people you have to put up with, you know? I'm trying to read my Spanish.
So we'll just give a big shout out to a very annoying guy with beatbox and Irish music playing out of it. So hello, and thank you as well.
Guys, remember, keep calm, read your Dickens. Is this a holiday? Hence home, you idle creatures. Enjoy the Anna Karenina method, Doc Lit, Marianella drama, dramatics, Balzac, and all the paint your brother out of his own painting with the Brontes.
And remember to read Doc Lit. Don't forget about, not Doc Lit, King Lit. No, what's his name? Doc Lit, yeah.
Get the gimmicks right.
King Lit.
We are going to end this episode with a fun special song that we made just to celebrate 2 years. It's the Ode to a Podcast, Books Boys, the song.
Oh, yeah.
And if the DJ would spin that record, we'll be back. Did we finish it? It's 25. Are we done? Did we finish? Do we retire?
I think we retire from now on, yeah. Oh, do we retire? But I still haven't found out what books are, so I don't know if this is the end.
We might need to continue. If 25 is not old enough to retire, then we'll be back in about a month.
See ya!
Hey, PJ, I've got a question for you. Do you like books? Because if you do, I think I have an idea.
the books. We review some books, then chat to the authors, give some recommendations, set out the ether. Is anyone listening? Who knows? That's how it goes with the podcast show. Books and books and books and books. Books and books and books. Books and books and books and books. Books and books and books.
Hey, who we got in here?
We got Dickens.
And his deputy, Wilkie Collins.
We got Tolstoy.
And Dostoyevsky, too.
We got Zaphon.
A whole episode just for
we
you.
We got them Bronte sisters, but not the brother, because he painted himself out of his own painting. Woo. We got Galdos.
Hey, anyone heard of Discovery of Heaven?
We got Orwell.
Winter Said Hollow.
And others. Books and books and books and books. Books and books and books.
Books and books.
Books and books and books and books. Books and books and
books. The end of career is a method.
What do we want?
We want books.
What do we want?
We want books.
What do we want?
Then even more books.
What do we want?
Then some authors.
What do we want?
Podcasts.
What do we want?
Books.
What do we want?
Reviews.
What do we want?
Books.
Books and books and books and books. Books and books and books.
Something to read.
Books and books and books and books.
Not from the toilet paper aisle.
Books and books and books and books.
Books and books and books.
Books and books and books and books.
Then question mark, then profit.
Boys Podcast.
Time for the Books Boys Podcast. It is the Books Boys Podcast. We are the Books Boys Podcast. Tell your friends.
Hurry up. Books and books and books and books. Books and books and books. Books and books and books and books. Books and books and books.
Paper is object.
Books and
so what do you
books
think, PJ?
Books books.
It's a good idea,
books
right?
Books and books and books. Roll it up like a scroll. Books and
shall
books
we...
and books and books.
Shall we record
books
an episode
and books and
with
books.
It, Lalfred?
Books and books and books.
Let's
and
do
books.
It.
Books and books and books. Books and books and books.
He's PJ.
Hello there.
I'm the Dean. We are the Books Boys.
Books Boys was presented by The Dean and PJ Burke in association with Thaddeus Penguin Productions. Ah! This episode was brought to you by our sponsor,
Society for Keeping Calm and Reading Your Dickens.
If you would like to get in touch, you can email us at booksboys@hotmail.com or visit us at booksboys.com. The intro uses Driving in the 70s from the Of Soundtracks and Garage Bands EP by Trapdoor. And the outro uses Dog's Light by Bravo Max from the album of the same name. All music used is either Podsafe or used with permission.
If you'd like to support the show, go to patreon.com/booksboys. Get the show early and all of our bonus Boof Fan the Boys shows. And you can also check out our music on Spotify or Apple Music.
thank you kindly for listening to us. Please tell your friends and come back next time for another episode of Books Boys. Read some books! such a weak little horn.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.